All right, here we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy John, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together, a hearty welcome to Buckmaster. It's Tuesday, the 28th of December, 2021. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We are at 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And without further ado, we go now on the live line, Dr. George Hammond, Economic and Business Research Center Director, Eller College of Management, University of Arizona. Dr. Hammond, Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thanks, Bill. Same to you.
So we're going to close out year two of the pandemic. How has it done economically? What has been the impact in Arizona and Tucson?
Well, Arizona has been recovering well from the initial shock of the pandemic. Overall, non-farm payroll jobs are now above where they were before the pandemic began. That's much better than the job performance nationally, where the nation has only replaced about 83% of the jobs lost during those early months of the pandemic. So overall, Arizona is recovering well. Our unemployment rate is now a little bit below where it was before the pandemic began. So the state is coming out of the pandemic in fairly strong shape.
Seems like every business, George Hammond, has that for hire sign. We are hiring. Please help. That sign is out. How is it done? How are we doing labor-wise?
Overall, labor markets are still really in turmoil, even though the overall numbers look pretty good. You know, there's just a lot going on underneath the surface. So, you know, employers are really struggling to hire, and a lot of workers are sitting on the sidelines, you know, kind of thinking about what they want to do with their lives and their careers. You know, there's a lot of individuals thinking about changing their industry in which they work and the occupations that they work in. So there's still a lot going on, but, you know, that will settle down as we go through the next year. People will make decisions and gradually return to the labor market in greater numbers.
We are so dependent on travel and tourism in this state. I think the good news about Omicron is it seems to be really burning through the population very fast, and most of the symptoms have been, cases have been mild. So hopefully we'll have a pretty quick travel and tourism recovery here into the new year, George Hammond.
Yeah, let's hope. You know, the pandemic has thrown us a lot of curveballs so far. Let's hope that those are over. But, you know, we do want to keep an eye out for, you know, new unexpected developments with respect to the pandemic. In terms of the travel and tourism industry, you know, it's in terms of employment, leisure and hospitality jobs are still about 20,000 below where they were before the pandemic began. The good news is that spending on travel and tourism, for instance, taxable sales at restaurants and bars, hotels and motels, and amusements is actually back to where it was before the pandemic began. So, you know, that tells you that, you know, entrepreneurs, particularly in the travel and tourism industry, are really working hard to find ways to meet the demand that's out there with a somewhat reduced labor force.
Now the big story, I think it's one of the big stories, I'm sure you'd agree as well, as the housing industry in Tucson and Arizona.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the really striking things about 2021 was a huge surge in house prices. You know, starting about the summer, you know, in Phoenix and in Tucson, median house prices were rising at, you know, 20% and 30% over the year, and still rising at about that pace through the end of the year. And that has really impacted housing affordability. So, you know, in Phoenix, you know, housing affordability, or the share of homes that were affordable to a family making the median income, in the third quarter of this year was just over 50% up in Phoenix. And that was down from almost 70% 2 years ago. You know, housing affordability by that measure is below the national average. Tucson's doing a little bit better. Tucson has about 65% of homes are affordable to a family making the median income, but that's even down from where we were 2 years ago.
Have the housing prices, though, leveled off somewhat, George Hammond?
Over the year, house prices are still up. We have data through November for Tucson. They were still up, you know, about 20% over the year. I think they will level off as we go through 2022. But at least compared to the early first half of 2021, they're going to look pretty high for a while.
Let's talk about migration. Arizona has been one of the fastest growing states for many years. Has that continued?
Yes. Migration has been a big driver of Arizona's population growth for a long time. What's really changed over the last 20 years is that natural increase has significantly dropped off. And we've seen this globally across the U.S. and in Arizona. And what that means is that we're seeing declining births in Arizona. And, the last year or so, we've actually seen more deaths than births here in the state. That's primarily driven by the pandemic. We'll return to more births than deaths, but that will only last for, 4 or 5 years before Arizona will be consistently seeing more deaths than births, as we see, relatively low birth rates and as, deaths rise with the aging of the baby boom generation. And that means that all of Arizona's population growth will be driven by net migration.
So Tucson did add some residents, as did most of the metro areas in the state, but you're saying the pace is just below the national average?
According to the latest data from the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity, Tucson's population growth was fairly strong in 2021, actually above the national average, as was the population growth in Phoenix and statewide. The issue is that that population growth was really driven by net migration. We don't have that kind of tailwind from natural increase, the births that we see each year that we've been used to in prior decades.
Getting back to housing affordability, is Tucson still a relatively good place to find good housing prices, or I don't want to say bargain, but maybe it is a bargain, George Hammond, when you look at other areas like San Jose or Seattle?
Yeah, that's the thing. Housing affordability has declined significantly compared to where we were 2 years ago, but that's happened across many metro areas across the U.S. But Arizona, Phoenix, and Tucson remain much more affordable than markets like, particularly markets where we tend to draw migrants, like L.A., San Francisco, San Jose, even Seattle and Denver.
So getting back to the personal income here in Arizona, that's been going up. That did go up in 2020, didn't it?
Yeah, we saw a huge surge in income in 2020, even with the gigantic pandemic job losses. Personal income was up 10% in 2020 over 2019. And that's a really fast rate of growth for Arizona. And what drove that was the huge influx of federal income support flowing to all states, including to Arizona. I think we'll see some growth even above 2020 and 2021, again, partly reflecting the federal income support. There's a lot of money in consumers' pockets, and they've been spending, especially on goods, but also as the travel and tourism sector has recovered, and we've seen, vaccinations gradually spread through the population, seen that on travel and tourism as well.
All right. The takeaway points, George Hammond, as we wrap this up with you, what is the outlook then going forward in four areas: jobs, population, income, and sales?
Overall, the outlook is strong for Arizona, particularly compared to the rest of the nation. We're going to see strong job growth and population growth over the next couple of years. But we are going to see decelerating income growth, and primarily because we won't have that big influx of federal income support. And that will mean we'll see slower gains in retail sales, particularly retail sales of goods.
And, of course, the virus.
Yep, there's still a lot of uncertainty about the progress of the virus, so that's going to be something we're going to have to watch. The virus will impact the outlook. If it turns out that we're pretty much done with the pandemic after the Omicron wave, then we'll be in good shape. But we always want to keep an eye on what's happening with the pandemic, because that'll have an important influence.
More details at azeconomy.org. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. You can find a summary of everything we've just discussed, as well as a huge amount of high frequency, rapidly updated economic data for Arizona and all Arizona's counties and metropolitan areas.
Dr. George Hammond, Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Bill. Same to you. Take care.
Thank you very much, Dr. George Hammond, Economic and Business Research Center Director, Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona. Now, let's talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's is open right now. They are back and up and running after taking, oh boy, a few well-deserved days off after the very, very busy Thanksgiving and Christmas. They had a great Thanksgiving and Christmas. May I make a suggestion, though? A lot of folks like something special New Year's Eve morning and or New Year's Day morning. May I suggest a Danish Kringle? Many of you took advantage of that suggestion for Christmas Eve and for Christmas. They bake some really large Kringles, enough for like 20, 25 people. These were huge items. But, of course, they have the regular size that can nicely accommodate, say, 4 to 6 people. Ask for your Danish Kringle when you stop by at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's Danish Bakery, open now for lunch. And, of course, their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Steve and the team, Steve is assistant baker Michael, Mona and Sherry, Steve's wife, all of them want me to wish you, and I'll do so very gladly, a Happy New Year. Back with Shelley Fishman right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman, on The Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. How are you, Shelley?
Oh, I've been better in my life, Bill. I got a head cold.
Well, yeah, I got a little cold there.
Yeah, I didn't want to take any chances.
Of course not. So, Shelley, end of year forecasting time. How overall the indexes did pretty well?
Well, yeah, the indices. for the year 2021. If we take a look at the Dow, and I'm going to go year to date, so we got a couple more days. Up about 16.7%. That's right on track of the five-year average, which is up 82.7%, or an average of 16.5%. So we're right in line there. And the 10-year is actually higher. The 10-year average. Or the 10-year Dow is up 197%, or about 19.7% per year.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we've always said that the market is the place to be in the long term, and we're seeing that that continues. If I take a look at the S&P 500, which, of course, is a broader-based index, year-to-date, we're 24.7%. Mm. 5-year 22% average, and 10-year 26% average. So what we're seeing is right in the middle there. I mean, this is turning out to be a pretty good year. Take a look at bonds, which is of course where conservative investors would be. Year to date, we're down about 3%, 2.9%. The 5-year average is up 3.7%, or less than 0.75% a year, and the 10-year is pretty much flat. It's at 0.16% per year, but that doesn't include interest. So if you've got a bond portfolio and you're getting, let's say, 3% interest on it, you're right up there at around 3%. Very conservative and fairly safe. We hear a lot about gold. Gold is down 2.3% year to date. On the 5-year average, it's actually up 9.3% per year, or about 46.5% over 5 years. But over 10 years, it's only up 11% total, or 1.1% per year. So gold is, you know, some people consider it very safe, but it's actually been kind of volatile. And if you've been holding it for a decade, you haven't done so well.
No, for sure.
Right.
The Santa Claus, so-called Santa Claus rally, seems to be in full force on Wall Street.
Yeah, it's a little bit mixed today, but we're ending the year better than I thought we would. And if we can hold for another 2.5 days, despite today being Tuesday, we will end the year very nicely, and people who are invested in markets will be very happy.
So the numbers have looked pretty darn good, haven't they, Shelley?
They have. If we take a look at where we're going to end the year in GDP growth, it's going to be close to 7. If we take a look at where unemployment is going to end by the end of the year, we're going to be at around 4. So we've almost fully recovered the macro numbers. Now, within those numbers, there are problems, of course, but The economy, and you know, in your prior segment, we talked about Arizona, and Arizona has done, you know, very well as well. So, yeah, we've got about 3 or 4 million people who are out of the job market who were in it before COVID. But when you take a look at the job openings, there are more openings right now than there are people to fill those jobs. So when people decide that they want to get back to work, there are jobs for them.
Let's talk about your forecast for next year. Is it guardedly optimistic, Shelley Fishman?
I would call it guardedly optimistic because there are three important factors that are going to come clear in the future, and they're fundamental changes from this year. First, by the end of the first quarter, I think we'll be able to see through to the end of the pandemic. If there's another variant or this continues and we continue to see the, you know, the numbers, even today, I think we had something over 250 or 260,000 new cases in the day yesterday. So, you know, that could have economic effects. But assuming that we can see through to the end of this by the end of the first quarter, that's one thing that figures into the way I'm doing the forecast. The second thing is we will see part, if not all, of the president's Build Back Better plan enacted. That's going to have an effect on inflation. It'll drop inflation, and it will allow people to get back to work because of some of the things that are forecast to be in there.
Now, go ahead, Shel.
And I was going to say the third is that we know that the Fed is going to cut back on its stimulus and going to raise interest rates. So that puts a little pressure in the other direction, which, from my perspective, is the reason I am guardedly optimistic.
All right, let's take a look at some of those areas.
Okay, so gold is going to stay flat to negative. Bonds will be up about 3%, slightly higher than average, because the dividend or interest yield will be affected by the rise in interest rates. So people will be willing to pay a little bit more for bonds. The S&P 500, I'm looking for a modest 18%. That's right in line with where it's been on average, but less than where it's been in the past decade. The Dow, right at around 12%. That is around where its past average has been. And GDP growth up for the year to about 4% or maybe 3.8%, with unemployment steady GDP growth at around 4%. So we're going to see close to 7% in 2021 when those numbers come in, but that'll normalize back down to around 4% next year, with unemployment also at around 4% or maybe just a skosh less.
Shelley, I want to circle back, if I may, back to bonds. Myself and many investors have bonds as part of the investment pie. Why have they done, you know, looking at that 5-year and the 10-year, why have they done kind of not that great?
Well, bonds are not supposed to do great.
Okay.
Especially when the stock market's doing well.
You know, they're a stopgap. Yeah.
They're a stopgap.
Okay.
However, if you have a mix of bonds or bond funds, bond ETFs in your portfolio that include some long-term bonds, some high-risk bonds, some medium, some munis, and some of the more conservative bonds, of, you know, essentially treasuries, you're going to come in at around 5% a year when you look at the dividends that you're going to get from ownership of those ETFs. Now, 5%, you know, isn't wonderful when you measure it against the 15, 18, or 20% that the market is doing. But considering how safe it is, and the fact that if you're in retirement, that allows you to sleep at night and be really sheltered or shielded from the kind of ups and downs that we not only see in volatility on a daily basis, but also, you know, we haven't had a recession now in a decade. Well, no, we had one caused by the pandemic, but not a normal recession. And, you know, there's going to be a pullback. So if you don't want to worry about those things, or you don't have the time to ride through a period of recession and lower stock prices, then having a percentage of bonds, a hefty percentage of bonds in your portfolio, is something that is very wise. And you know, when I was doing this for clients on an individual basis, I shot for around 5% on average yield from the ownership of bonds, and we made it most years. That's not bad.
No, it isn't. So it sounds like bonds are doing exactly what they should be doing. Okay, Shelley, so an excellent overview of the where we have been this year and where we may be going. I appreciate it very much. I appreciate everything you do for us. Want to wish you and yours a happy new year, and I hope you feel a little better. I couldn't tell that you had a cold, but I know you do, and you don't feel that great.
Yeah. We'll look forward to seeing you in studio next week.
Boy,
happy
I sure
new year.
Hope so. Happy New Year to you, Shelley. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. The Buckmaster Show, Midway Point, first half hour, getting some really good information on our economy in Arizona and Tucson from George Hammond, the economic forecaster at the University of Arizona. And we just heard from Shelley Fishman, our financial consultant, gave us a really, really concise overview of how the markets did this year and Shelley's prediction for next year. All right, we're going to talk about COVID, and we are going to have Will Humble with us, former Arizona State Health Director, right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It'd be nice to have some color like a poinsettia. They've still got some at Green Things for to bring in the new year. Check it out. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. GreenThingsAZ.com. Open daily in their 51st year. Their 13-acre site filled with beautiful things that grow. And then beautiful things that are handmade, in many cases, at Zocalo Village, where they've got some beautiful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Their website is ZocaloVillage.com. There are five shops there at Zocalo Village on that 13-acre site by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Phoenix. Will Humble is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. 30 years in public health, including more than two decades in the Arizona Department of Public Health or Department of Health Services, where he served in various roles, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Recently, he served as a policy health advisor at the University of Arizona. He is the director of marketing and public relations and the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. We're proud to have Will as one of our two dozen regular contributors on the Buckmaster Show. His category is appropriately enough public health. Will, how are you? Happy New Year.
Yeah, good afternoon. You too.
Really serendipitous having you on today. The quarantine protocols now have changed from the CDC. A lot of people are saying it's about time. Give us your overview, Will.
So I have sort of an inside baseball grievance on this thing. There is some pretty good evidence to defend what CDC did, which is to change the isolation and quarantine guidance from 10 days to 5 days. You know, there have been some studies that show that the most infectious period is the day and a half before you have symptoms, and then the 2 to 3 days after you initially have symptoms. And the new guidance is consistent with that. But that, you know, when the CDC director Walensky put this new guidance out yesterday, they didn't reference any evidence to support it. And so as a result, or at least in part as a result, a lot of people in the public health community and in the healthcare community have a real problem with the new CDC isolation and quarantine guidance. I'm okay with it. I just see it as a major unforced error on the part of the CDC director that, hey, look, you know, when you make a major policy change, in order for it to work, you've got to show that you've done your homework and prove that you've got the evidence to back it up. And I just don't understand a rookie mistake like changing really important guidance without defending it. So like I said, that's an inside baseball kind of grievance. I ran agencies and I know a big mistake when I see one. And while I don't have a problem with the decision itself, I have a problem with the way they rolled it out.
All right, Will. People are very confused. Do they have a cold? Do they have COVID? Do they have maybe a mild case of flu? A year ago, I stood in line to get, my wife and I stood in line and paid well over $100 for a rapid test. Now they're either free or under $10. If you go to like CVS, had some at one of our local CVS, you can get a test pretty darn quickly. One of those, get the results in 15 minutes. That's one of the big areas that's changed in the last year.
Oh, that's a huge change. It gives you immediate actionable information for if you're going to have a, you know, a New Year's party or just have friends over, or if you just start feeling run down and you wonder, geez, was, do you think I was exposed at that, you know, party at the health club or whatever. So, yeah, that is a major change, and it's a lot more convenient. You know, what I would do is, you know, sometimes you go into the Walgreens or CVS or whatever, and they're out of stock. So when I go in for vitamins or batteries or something like that, I always just check around to see if they have any. And I don't think I'm hoarding, but we have about 6 test kits in our bathroom ready to go for when something happens, like, you know, one of us feels run down or we feel like we may have had an exposure, or if somebody in our family or friends comes over with questionable status, we can ask them to test. So, yeah, the rapid test is a huge change from where we were a year ago.
Yeah, I'm hearing some of the reports show that if you're fully vaxxed, in other words, 3 vaccinations, that if you have a mild case, it can present with a sore throat, some fatigue, and that would be about it. If that's the case, hopefully this Omicron is not going to be that big a deal with hospitalizations. Okay, your take on that.
Yeah, so you mentioned people that are vaccinated and boosted, and that is true, that it's a quite mild presentation. But it's also true that Omicron, when compared head-to-head against Delta, has a milder clinical presentation. In other words, it doesn't tend to cause as serious of symptoms as Alpha or Delta. And so that's really good. Why is that good? Because Omicron is at least twice as contagious as Delta. And Delta was a lot more contagious than Alpha.
Right.
So Omicron is really on steroids when it comes to how easily it's transmitted. And if Omicron had been as lethal or as serious as Delta, we would have been in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, we're going to have a very challenging January in Arizona, but it won't be nearly as catastrophic as it would have been if Omicron turned out to be just as dangerous as Delta.
Are we putting too much emphasis on the case count? The media has gone absolutely crazy reporting on the, you know, the doubling and tripling of cases in some states over a 36-hour period. Should we, and some health folks in your profession are now saying the COVID case counts, Will Humble, should no longer be the major pandemic metric amid the mild Omicron infections?
Yeah, milder is all
mild,
that.
Milder, milder.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the big issue for the next 6 to 10 weeks is all about hospitalizations, hospital capacity, hospital occupancy, and not necessarily because of the persons who are going to be coming in for COVID, but because of who gets displaced. You know, people who need a gallbladder surgery, persons who are diagnosed with a slow-growing prostate cancer, people who need or would really benefit from a new heart valve or a stent in their heart. Those are the kinds of persons that are going to be displaced from the healthcare system until probably March. So, yes, I agree. The major thing we should be looking at are emergency department visits and general ward and ICU availability. And part of that stress point is the incoming persons that have COVID infections. And part of it is just that we've got our winter visitors here. And part of it is that nurses are quitting. They're burning out. And it's getting harder and harder for hospitals to keep staffing up. And I think we've talked about this before, Bill. Like, nurses know that they can take a 6-week break from their career and stay home and chill and watch Netflix and, you know, get some rest. And find a job, you know, when they decide they want to come back to work in, let's say, March, they could find a job in 36 hours. They know that, you know, and that is a major problem within our system as well.
And the burnout, not just with nurses, but doctors, think about what they've been going through here for the first case of COVID. was reported about 2 years ago this week. So look what they've been going through.
Yeah, and don't forget the respiratory therapists. You know, they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting throughout this as well. It's challenging, and it's not just the number of hours and so forth. I've been hearing this a lot. It's, you know, the way they're being treated by family members of persons that are infected and hospitalized with COVID. And I'm not saying they're all disrespectful, but if it happens once a week, it's enough to really take the wind out of your sails. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And they're being, in certain cases, there are other reports, they are being very disrespected. And then there are those that, before they're put on a ventilator, just begging to have the inoculation, as if that's going to change anything.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, it's real sad, but we've got lots more to talk about, including where we are right now with hospitalizations in Arizona. We've got more with Will Humble after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Happy New Year from our sponsors over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And they want me to not only wish you a Happy New Year, but ask you to consider a visit to their lovely area of the Land of Enchantment. It's only about a three-hour drive. I suggest a quick visit over to Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org. I think you'll be impressed with the activities available in that beautiful area of the Southwest and some great places to stay as well. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the live line for his monthly visit. Actually, we're doing a double visit with Will this month. He was a couple of weeks ago, our Friday Focus interview. Will Humble, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association, former Arizona State Health Director. And he puts out a really good blog if folks are interested, and it's AZPHA. So it's Arizona for Public Health Association. So it'd be AZPHA.org. And Will, I was just looking at the blogs. This letter, this open letter to Governor Ducey, to Interim Director Harrington, Dr. Carmona, healthcare leaders and policymakers. What's the letter about, and what interventions might save lives in Arizona?
Yeah, so that was a open letter that was organized by a group called the Right to Safe Schools, and it's a consortium of, you know, parents, PTA members, doctors, a bunch of physicians on that group. And what they're urging is, I mean, I think they don't have any illusions that none of this, that things are going to actually change. But, you know, they're recommending things like, you know, mandatory checking a vaccination status before people go into bars, restaurants, and nightclubs to boost the immunization rates around Arizona, to require universal masking in public indoor spaces for the next 6 weeks. Things like that, changing, making some adjustments to hospital visitation policies. I think part of that is they put this out in a sense of frustration, because they know that there's these evidence-based tools that are out there that could help save lives, not just COVID members, but people who just need general hospital care for things like, you know, minor surgeries and so forth. And, they have hundreds of people sign that letter, and it went in, you know, to the governor and Interim Director Harrington. Nothing's going to come of it, but it made him feel better, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
To get people to sign on.
How will Governor Ducey be remembered when the pandemic is in the rearview mirror?
Well, I think it depends on who you are. You know, there are people that really think he's done a terrific job, that, you know, he has, kept his foot off the accelerator and let things happen. And there are people who think that that's a good thing, that they're more interested in commerce and bars, restaurants, and nightclubs, and they're more interested in not having to wear a mask when they're in a crowded indoor environment than, you know, than slowing the number of infections and saving some lives. So there's a lot of people that think he's doing a terrific job. And there are people like me who believe that he's been doing a grossly inadequate job, and their opinion isn't going to change either. So it really just depends on who you are. And quite honestly, a lot of that is hooked to political ideology in the end.
Let's bring us up to date, Will, on where are we with hospitalizations at this point in this break here between Christmas and New Year's. And I would think if we may see a big spike after New Year's.
Well, we're going to see a big spike in infections, and it's yet to be seen what we're going to see in terms of the spike in new hospitalizations. And on the Eastern Seaboard, in the state of Washington and so forth, they're a couple of weeks ahead of us in terms of the amplification of Omicron. And they've had big spikes in new cases, but a modest increase in new hospitalizations. Now, those states also have better vaccination rates than we do, and so I expect us to have more of a bump in hospitalizations than those East Coast and state of Washington type of states. So we're going to see an influx into the hospitals, that's for sure. You asked about the situation, and again, there I can say that the hospital system is saturated statewide, but worse in some places, like Kingman, like Yuma, like Bisbee down in southeast Arizona, like up in Yavapai County. So there are there are pockets which are completely saturated and other places where they're just over capacity. Now, I think I'd venture to say every hospital has changed their admission policies. In other words, persons that would have been admitted under normal circumstances for observation and treatment are now being, you know, sent home and not admitted to the hospital. Likewise, people who would have normally be moved from a general ward floor to intensive care are not being moved to the intensive care. And the other thing that's happening is people are being discharged from the hospital earlier than they would normally be discharged because they've got somebody even sicker that needs that treatment and that bed and those resources. So it's saturated now. It's going to be that way at least through mid-February. And if there is any good news on this, which it's hard to say anything good about this, is that Omicron is so incredibly contagious that what is actually happening here is, you know, we're compressing about 6 months worth of infections into 2 months. Because you see what I'm saying? Like, infections would have continued into 2022, but all those persons are going to get infected, or many of them will be infected in January and February, especially those persons that are unvaccinated. And so, you know, and they will build immunity from that infection, you know, an infection with this virus provides pretty good immunity, immune mm-hmm. protection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we will be in a, you know, you can get towards herd immunity two ways, vaccinations and infections. And this Omicron variant is going to really accelerate the infections, not just here in Arizona, but globally. I think Omicron is what is going to be the end of the public health crisis globally once it's run its course, because it's going to infect billions of people.
Yeah, I agree. I hope you're right, and I do agree that seems to be where we're going. So those that do test positive with Omicron, they may not even, if they were like taking a test and they felt perfectly fine and they came up positive, that would not be such a rare occurrence, would it? I mean, there's going to be I don't know what the percentage is, but maybe you have some idea of those that test positive that don't have any symptoms at all, Will.
Yeah, it's about half.
Right? About half. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's different by different age groups, but for persons between 20 and 40, it's you can say it's about half.
Well, it's a difficult time, but I think like that was a very good point you made about compressing all of this into a couple of months, and I hope that's the case. And we haven't talked about flu. What are you hearing about flu cases? We had a very mild flu year last year. I happen to think, and maybe you would agree, that a lot of that has to do with people wearing masks, but what's your take?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, that's it. And it was something that we observed globally, that influenza really just tanked last year. It just was almost non-existent. You could even say it was non-existent really in Arizona last winter season. And you asked, what about this year?
Yeah.
So this year we've got cases of influenza. It is below seasonal normal, but it still exists, and it will continue to be part of the equation in terms of why our hospitals are going to be so strained in January and February. But I think fortunately we are also in for a milder influenza season this year, just because there are many people, not enough people, but many people wearing face masks. And the other thing we've learned about this during this pandemic is that, you know, face coverings are super effective at stopping or even eliminating influenza transmission. It's masks are not as effective with COVID-19 as they are with influenza. It's remarkable, this natural experiment we've gone through with masking globally. And now we have a tool that, at least that it won't happen, but we mm-hmm. know now that if we've got most people or many people wearing masks in public places, it can really cut down on the influenza numbers.
All right, Will Humble, thank you very much. We'll have a happy new year. Talk to you in about 3 weeks. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, back with you, 12:04 tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.